Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ash Millman.
Hello.
And joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, hello.
What do you guys think of Mass Effect?
Great.
Fantastic. It is pretty damn good.
Fantastic franchise.
Okay, remember that it's not 2007. What do you think of it now?
Still good.
I really didn't like Mass Effect Andromeda. I think it was the worst game in the entire franchise.
Which, whereas Ash has said, it's not that bad.
It's not. That's my favourite phrase. It's not that bad. But no, I played Andromeda. I bashed it all the way through. It was one of the games that killed me off gaming for a little while afterwards.
Really?
Because I made myself play every single facet of it and didn't enjoy it that much, basically, and it squeezed all my juices dry. It is not the best game in the franchise,
no,
definitely, but it is not as bad as some people vilify it for.
Me and Jules once filmed a full 45-minute debate on this, and then the camera wasn't recording or wasn't in focus.
No,
it
wasn't in focus. Yeah, so
something we couldn't do it.
It looked like we'd been smeared with Vaseline, or we'd gotten so angry that we'd spat on.
And I loved that debate because me and Jules had this whole debate thing around the launch of Andromeda because I thought the combat was really good, and I thought that if you love Mass Effect enough, it was kind of like, you know, papering over the wound left behind by Mass Effect 3.
But
it's a gaping wound.
We'll get back.
The whole point of this podcast is to ostensibly address the state of Mass Effect and if it has a future and the state of BioWare. Because the reason I brought about the comparison with a decade ago is because BioWare used to be in such a stronger position. Like just bringing up their older franchises, like you had Knights of the Old Republic, you got Dragon Age, you got even Jade Empire was like one of their first quote unquote stumbles, but that still has a nice audience.
Played that fairly recently. I played it last year in Summit. It doesn't hold up as well as I remember it, but the combat is still possibly the best combat system that I would say that they've introduced outside of the Mass Effect over the shoulder sort of stuff.
Because I think if you take those old games and you sort of they obviously had a big reputation for being storytellers and they had great immaculate work with characters and just general sort of senses of immersion, and you know, they had this real vibe around them where it was if you're going to buy a BioWare game, you knew what you were in for. And I think that's changed.
Fantastic world builders.
Great world building and an assumption that your role in the story has a meaningful outcome kind of thing. And I think that's what's changed over the years. I think if you look at Andromeda, the only, well, for me, some of the only positives of Andromeda were in the gameplay. But that's kind of what they've focused on now when you look at Anthem.
What do you mean?
Combat.
Well, okay, I thought you meant the only positive thing about this game was the gameplay, which sounds the actual game.
No, just the hands-on stuff.
For me, Andromeda was just there's so much that's wrong with it. It is a functional game. As in, you could literally sit down and put 40, 50 hours into it and see it through. Mm-hmm. But you tell me that the story was engaging. It wasn't. It was so stupid to begin with. It didn't make any sense.
You're wrong, Ash.
Now, I'm not saying that you're wrong. Everyone is entitled to their opinions, but I'm just saying, for me, undoing some of the lore that they'd spend ages, crafting... Mm-hmm. The story just didn't feel like it meant anything to me. The characters felt throwaway or incredibly forced. It felt like this was a game that was made by community and not with passion. And I felt that there were areas where BioWare really were almost hitting their stride. Mm. And then something just came along with a cosh and just did it over. You know what I mean?
The cosh. But I think, looking at the general sort of art direction, one of the only things that says, hey, this is a whole new galaxy or whatever, is the floating space rocks at the beginning. You never really feel like you've made this meaningful kind of change from the original trilogy. And I quite like that they had, there's only three new races in it, the Ket and the Angara, and I forget what you call the ones that you find at the very end.
And they were really all annoying because they're all very human-like
as
well.
People.
I wanted more Hanar, I wanted more weird-looking things.
Totally. Hanar and Encores from
the Encores,
the ones who speak,
where they tell you the mood that they're in.
Yeah, before they speak.
Imagine how useful that would be. It's kind of mildly annoyed with Ash. Hi, Ash. You know,
Mass Effect Andromeda wasn't very good.
Undefended.
How dare you, Jules?
Crying.
But the stuff like that is kind of what I'm not going to demand that they have it, but if they were going to have, make this clean break from the original trilogy, then you would assume that they would have more out of their kind of alien races, but all we got were those like big thighed cat people. And it was just a bit weird. Like even their just general proportions just look so strange. And I was like, is that meant to be intentional or have you kind of blown it up?
Yeah.
And it's worth quickly dropping in. You can totally defend Andromeda in a sec, but it's worth dropping in a thing because Kotaku and Jason Schreier did a whole deep dive on why Andromeda ended up the way that it did. And it turns out that it was a lot of infighting between the studios at BioWare. Which is...
And you can tell because it's a game that just feels like it was made in piecemeal and then just stitched together at the end with no sort of form or thought going into it, because everything, like I was saying before, you split it apart, it's fine, functional, but you tell me that the driving sections and that felt good in the context of the game. They felt fine to play, but just...
I'm interested to hear all of these. Like, I know people didn't like Andromeda. I know they didn't like Mass Effect 3, and I also like Mass Effect 3's ending as well, which blasphemy.
No, see, I really liked Mass Effect 3.
There we go.
I'm also thinking, because the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer was one of the most fun experiences I had for yonks. I had every bit of DLC.
Solid,
it was so good.
They're like, ugh.
I can't.
The action in Mass Effect 3, like, I know that is what they leaned really heavily into for that third one. It was an action game rather than a narrative driven game, but that's fine.
EA had
put their claws, like their marks on that at that point, and this is what it was going to be, and I was fine with that.
It seems that the way that it's kind of all wrapped up in the fact that they got acquired by EA in 2007, but they obviously still managed to put out like Mass Effect 2. I still maintain Mass Effect 2 is one of the best games of all time.
Mass Effect 2 is the best game, it might just be
it's
so good.
And it's like that was under EA's wing, but that was before this generation sort of kicked off in earnest and a lot of the more money grubby stuff kind of came about. And Mass Effect 3, you saw that influence a hell of a lot more, where like Javik was resigned to day one DLC, so if you want a plot, an integral character, you have to pay for
so
him additionally.
Boring as well.
What, Javik?
Yeah,
of course. Oh, he's great.
Like, I like the little bits of dialogue that he got when you went to different places.
He's so
like,
cool.
Oh, I remember this place, but it's just they're like, all right.
Oh, I like Javik. But either way, though, the practice behind it, the idea of siphoning off something that we used to get fully. I mean, they did do additional squad mates in 2, but like Kasumi and I forget what you call the dude with the...
Zaid.
They didn't feel...
He was boring as well.
He was boring. I literally got the suicide mission, I was like, get lost.
And they totally felt optional. It felt like this additional thing. Optionally. It's almost like cosmetic DLC if it was a character. And so like, but then with 3, it was like, oh, we're doing our first playable Prothean, or like you can work with him or whatever, but you got to pay for him. And I think those sort of that weird way that of like, you know, EA's oversight, they made them change the ending because the original one was talked about online, and so they had to go back and change it.
Yeah.
Hence the whole Star Child pile of stuff that was that ending. But I think just to bring back up the combat side of it, I mean, do you guys care about Anthem, the way that Anthem's gone?
I mean, I look at it and I think that it's like Destiny, it's BioWare's version of Destiny. Mm-hmm. And I think that it holds great promise.
Right.
But I feel like maybe the delivery of it is leaving something to be desired, and it shows possibly the publisher EA has just taken all of the feedback it got from launches like Battlefront, from mistakes that's made in the past, and not really learned anything from it.
No.
It's still poking and seeing what it can get away with, but it's wrong to use a new upcoming IP to test that out. I wouldn't mind so much if it was a game like FIFA, because that will sell no matter what, and they can try whatever backdoor shenanigans they want to get up to with that. But at the same time, with Anthem, it needs to do well in order for that IP to survive, and I love the idea of it.
Right.
I just wish it played as well as I
don't know. I can't even get behind the idea of it, because it feels so much like a, here's Destiny, like draw a little outline around it, post it down, do it again. Like, it feels too much like an idea that's already been done, especially as it's in a science fiction setting. I'm like, if they wanted to do this, they should have taken it somewhere else so that it didn't feel quite as literally, here's a nice design, let's take this over here.
Because what were some of the stuff that you quite liked in Andromeda that they could have maybe like taken into Anthem in terms of, like, what was the stuff that you quite liked about
the whole thing I liked about Andromeda and why I defend it is because I enjoy anything in the Mass Effect universe, and
same.
I feel like any sort of offering where I can step into that world and experience it and enjoy it, and all of the actual world building you get to do in Andromeda, I think is amazing, where you're like terraforming planets and all that sort of thing.
Okay.
I thought it was a really nice little touch, and maybe that would be good in Anthem, like being able to like manipulate environments to a large scale.
Have agency like on a planetary scale.
Yeah, but I think the main thing that makes Andromeda bearable is that it's a Mass Effect title and you get all these throwbacks to the Mass Effect.
Well, that was always my thing. It's a papering over of the wound kind of thing. It's sort of a tide over. But like, I always thought you could tell the creative director, Casey Hudson, wasn't on the project. I mean, Andromeda was made by Mass Effect 3's multiplayer team, which was, you know, you sort of read that and you go, okay, it kind of makes sense. Yeah. That's why the combat is the focus. And that's why that side of it works better than sometimes the story side of it or like specific character beats. And people don't really go through that much in that game. But then you look at like Anthem and it's like, that's the tone that they've carried forward. It's this very like easy access kind of people characters going like, we got this, and then you know, like, we got this is like the go-to like base 101 entertainment thing.
Playing Destiny when I first like tried that, like, this was like ages ago when it was first around, when I first played that, I just felt empty, like the world felt empty. It was full of people doing things, doing weird dances to each other, but it just it felt like empty. It felt like it had this massive face but nothing behind it, whereas that's what Anthem is feeling like to me again, just from all this first look stuff,
like a beautiful facade.
It's such a beautiful world and everything, but because it's not actually like so much a narrative as it is a multiplayer experience, like I don't like it. I like games to give me something to go in there for.
I mean, are we asking too much though? Like, I mean,
well, that's my overall point because of how where they've come from.
Anthem maybe missold the premise of what it was based on the very first trailer. We all thought that it was going to be a story driven thing, or there was going to be something that felt like it was going to be like, you know, when they did the whole thing of the vertical slice where the guy was floating through all of the different world bits. It looked amazing, and you thought to yourself, this is just going to be one part of a massive world or level, and it's like, nah, it's not.
It seems like actually that in terms of environments it is that. Well, I don't know for the full game, but like people have played a lot of the beta and it's all that one main biome where you've got like the big waterfalls and again floating rocks. They love floating rocks.
It's and so there's a lot of that. Though. Yeah. Like, I'm here for a floating rock.
I'm here for the floating rock, but you need more. That can't be the only thing you have. But yeah, like, I mean, that they kept saying like, oh, don't worry, we've got a BioWare story. There's going to be a BioWare story in here. And when I wrote up like ups and downs on the website, and I think that there are little hints of old BioWare in there. Like, you meet a character called Matthias and he sort of splits his personality into three, and one of them is just Morden Solus. Because he's just like this weird, like, you know, like technologically
minded.
Does
he have minded. A song?
He doesn't have a song yet, he doesn't have a song in the beta, but that little like kind of like old school feel of BioWare. It's like, okay, someone actually took the time to write a character and it feels like a character. Yeah. And I cared when he got kidnapped and I had to go get him again. But then I just walked up and held X and I won the mission, and it was the exact same thing in everything. But that's the thing. Like, where are they now and where do they go from here? Like, is BioWare fundamentally changed? And are we ever going to see something like that old run again?
I think that maybe BioWare has possibly pigeonholed themselves into the sci-fi developer who will aim big and maybe take a while to get its full message out. Like, I really felt that while Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic was utterly fantastic, Knights of the Old Republic 2, in terms of the tweaks and the balances they made, actually felt like the game that they were trying to make
that's
the first
not
time around.
Them. That was Obsidian.
Oh, well,
but they obviously like had a hand. They helped out. But
it's things like that where like they have a concept, but I feel like they always need to get their second one out to establish on the promises made.
A bit like an Ubisoft, where it's like, proof of concept.
A better example would be instead of Knights of the Republic would be Mass Effect and Mass Effect 2.
Yep.
Like, Mass Effect 1, like, it's a fantastic story, but there's a lot of gameplay issues for it. It looks like, I remember there was a review I read ages ago, which is that the walking animation for Shepard looks like he's trying to chew toffee with his butt cheeks. Like, you know,
and he just walk properly.
And fighting the Geth felt very, like, sluggish and a bit clunky.
Okay.
But then in Mass Effect 2, the action was doubled down on and it felt brilliant. And because of the fact they built the pedigree with the story the first time around, they allowed that to develop. Mm-hmm. And I feel like BioWare is maybe not looking at Anthem and just being like, okay, if this one doesn't do as well as we want it to, then the next one will be the one that will be what we really
and
want it to
be. And they're not going to keep getting those chances. Yeah, like, if this one fails, then they're not going to keep getting like the readers.
Because why should you? Why should you give a people?
But, like, I mean, that was another thing, was they immediately were out there saying, hey, by the way, Dragon Age 4 is coming. Like, don't worry about it. Like, and we're going to do
I'm excited by that. I'm like, sure.
Well, that's what they want.
Yeah, but you see what I mean, though? It's kind of just like, we know Anthem isn't exactly what everyone wants, but EA wanted a game to come out, and we happen to just be the right people at the right time. And so,
I mean, like, there'll obviously be if because it was some of BioWare's higher ups were the ones that also didn't like the original ending for Mass Effect 3. So there's obviously going to be like the quote unquote cartoonish bean counters in BioWare as well as the publisher side of things. Yeah. And so there is a financial reality to making a loot grindy shooter.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you.
That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
So, you know, who's to say that BioWare aren't all in on Anthem? But I think that the parts of their past games they focused on are things like the combat from Andromeda or the action focus that came in on Mass Effect 3. And then that's what they've started to build a game around. I mean, when was the last time we were wowed by a BioWare story? It was Mass Effect 2?
Mass Effect 3, I thought. The thing is, you have to really take Mass Effect 3 as the ending of a franchise, not just the end being the end. So Mass Effect 3 as a game, as a whole, that story did wow me because it tied up all the different things, like ignoring the final 10 minutes. Like, that is a story that wowed me. So I think that's fair.
That's good. I mean, that was 2013?
Yeah, next on from Mass Effect 2, I still think Mass Effect 3 was a story that wowed me. I think Andromeda has a story at its heart that needs polishing that is
unbelievable amounts of polish.
Yeah, like, it needs a little scrub, but it's there.
You say it on paper and just kind of like, oh, you're the shepherd, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, okay, cool, whatever. That sounds all right. And then it's just like, and then nothing happens with it. And then it's like, you just happen to be the right place at the right time. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is, I hate circumstantial stories. That's why my favorite.
He's the chosen one.
You're the Pathfinder.
Yeah, but my the Puffer, that's what it was, not Shepherd. My favorite one that they've done is the Knights of the Old Republic.
Okay.
Just because that mid game twist, everything falling apart, you traveling to the center of all this galaxy, and you're having this, it felt like
that was our mic falling apart for the audio people. But it's fine.
It felt like an incredibly personal tale that still managed to capture the scope of a universe that was collapsing in on itself due to the wars and pressures of this empire that was built, that was being built. That was BioWare at its core and its pure storytelling.
I tell you what is also worth addressing is, because now, like, when you sort of look at all of BioWare stuff like this, and you think of all those games, like, you know, kind of sequentially, they've reused the same plot points over and over and over and over again, and they're in Anthem.
Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
The ancient race of, like, technology that we're all trying to figure out. Yeah. Like, it was even in KOTOR, like the whole go to those different nodes and activate stuff,
completely
and it's in Anthem.
Completely different.
Yeah, they swap the noun turns out, yeah.
The Remnants and the Reapers, not the same. Like.
Hangover 2 is a completely separate film.
Yeah.
But yeah, and even in Anthem, they've got, the, I can't think what you call them now, but there's an ancient race that are behind why the Anthem is the name of the world, yeah. And that's what shifts around, and they're trying to figure that out.
Let's just call them the Forgotians.
Sure, it's something like the Sorcerers or something, like the Source.
My word
men.
Was better, to be fair.
I like the Sorcerers. But yeah, I mean, that's
they're
one of the
like
things.
Cheap 10p sweets you used to get down the corner.
Or a nice
shop.
Little saucer. Oh, that's more of an English thing.
Busy sauces.
Point being that I think when you look at the way that a lot of their stories, like we love all their old school stories, but they sort of had a template that they were sticking to. And I think they've innovated on the combat side, on the gameplay side, but they haven't on the story side. And even though actually in Andromeda, I remember, not Drew Karbyshyn, Mac Walters saying that like he liked the idea of changing the dialogue system so that it wasn't just binary Paragon and Renegade. Mm. It was just like 5 or 6 options and you never really knew what was good or bad.
Yeah.
Like that was a nice idea.
I do like that.
But I kind of read a hell of a lot after the fact saying that if you don't know what you're committing to, that therefore limits what your character actually is, and it ends up being this big like miasma of grey kind of thing.
It's actually a false economy of choice, that, because basically if you are given a vague word like threat or
like
something
sarcasm
like that,
in Fallout 4.
Yeah, like sarcasm, then you actually have no control because it's a predetermined response that you are basically just going,
yeah.
You've got it written out for you exactly what you're going to say, then at least you have some agency over those three. I'd rather have your classic good, middle, bad joke one. I personally think that if you give me 4 options that are all written out and I get to choose them, that to me feels like I have more control rather than just being like, I might tell a joke or I might punch you in the face. Pressing the one button.
I think that lets you do a lot more with story branches as well. I mean, obviously, it is more specific. If you choose this, therefore this will happen. That's what Fable 2 used to always have. But going forward, like, I mean, I guess what do you want to see if they do more Mass Effect? And that was another thing I wanted to throw I was going to skip past that poop. But still, you were the one who said to me that they actually did do something on N7 Day. Like, they did tease something.
Yes.
Which I've now forgotten.
The whole thing at the end of the video was... it's N7 Day. What does this mean to you? What does this mean to you? What does this mean to you? And then at the end of it was the studio being like, every day we come into the work thinking about how we can make the next great Mass Effect game.
Okay.
Which was warming to the heart.
Yes.
And also exciting still. I'm still get excited by hearing Mass Effect. I don't get the pit of dread that you get like with Bethesda games now. You get that little moment where you're like, oh, please think, work out well.
Yeah, because I think Mass Effect is still so tappable. Like, I mean, there's still a way to do a game that like has the right combat story split of Mass Effect 2. Yeah. Maybe even 3. I mean, 3 has the best combat of the Mass Effect games.
Combat,
because it definitely moves very fast. And I like that you can take cover everywhere, you can pull guys around corners, there's all that kind of thing. And I think that they have a way to go back to that. I would ultimately just scrub Andromeda from our lives.
I think it's worth being around.
So would you stay in the Andromeda galaxy or would you go back to do something else?
I wouldn't scrub it from existence. I think it's fine being there.
Combat.
I think if they can develop the Andromeda universe, it would be good. But I think the story that has been told there is the story. Mm. I don't think they
the tale of the shepherd.
It's kind of like
the Pathfinder. The Pathfinder in Andromeda.
Yes. Yes.
Shepherd in
That's the one. The thing is that like it's kind of like the Star Wars stories, like the Rogue Ones and the Han Solos. That's what I see Andromeda as, something that fits into the bigger narrative, but isn't necessarily essential viewing in order to get a full appreciation of the franchise. I would recommend that people play it because of the fact that it's worth experiencing just because, there, like you say, there is a massive lore dump and you do feel like you're involved in a lot
of things.
It's very
pretty.
It fixed a lot as well.
It's very pretty.
Well, when it stopped bugging out.
Well, I did.
Yeah.
They've patched a lot of that stuff now on the technical side. When it initially started to leak, whether they were going to do another Mass Effect, it was going to be this like side story thing. Yeah. And all the stuff with the Ark, the idea that, what do you call it, the Elusive Man, like that he'd somehow funded, like, or Cerberus had funded this idea of a group of people, like a billionaire, like a bunch of people who believed Shepard and believed the warnings about the Reaper invasion, and then they set off to just escape.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, that's a great pivot to do. And I wrote a whole thing about like how they could have done it or they should have done it. And I totally would love if they had, I mean, I think it's too late to do it now, but I think in Andromeda, you could have had a bunch of characters where like some of them believe Shepard, some of them don't. And you can explore, they can kind of metatextually address the end of Mass Effect 3 through a new crew based on who believed him, who didn't. Oh, did you hear about Star Child? That's ridiculous.
I mean, what I think would be fantastic is if like you don't even need to go to the full war scope. That's the thing. Everyone always thinks that it needs to go bigger and better for the next one, and that's fine for the trilogy. Mm-hmm. But what about this? I'm going to pitch an idea to you for the next
Bring
one.
It.
If any Mass Effect developers are watching, you play as a Turian, and you are on the Citadel just as a police officer. That is the entire game, and you basically have to undercover. There's an undercover ring that's looking to either sabotage or take control of the mainframe or weapon system, and it's set around the time between Mass Effect 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. So there's the bigger war that's going on there, and but you have to hold the fort.
I think that would be...
kind of like Dragon Age 2?
I think that would be a fantastic spin-off as a smaller game. I don't think you'd get a 40-hour thing out of it,
but,
though.
But that's the thing. I'm thinking that like BioWare should maybe scale things back. Yeah. That's the problem.
Have a little dabble.
Like, go for the story focus. Go for a personal tale that does include a few characters but doesn't try and draw in everything, because it's the weight. The weight gets boring.
Yeah.
Of just like, you are the chosen one. Here is the secret alien doodad that will do this. It's just like, just give me a small personal tale.
I would like them to do that because it would focus on storytelling.
The thing, DLC, the Citadel DLC was their best example of...
And that was fantastic. I thought it was brilliant.
That was, oh God, I didn't like how that was like, let's just have a party. And I was like, oh, just,
it's
no.
The best example of them doing a small base thing that includes all the characters.
True.
That isn't a big war. Like,
and it is one of the highest rated DLCs that they've done.
Well, that must be, Carly Rae Jepsen's the best artist on the planet. I mean, she's
No.
Why are you dissing Carly Rae?
I don't want to go there. But I kind of think that they, like I said, they have these great, like, immaculate storytelling chops, and you just, it's so, at the minute, it's so buried by the combat side. The last time they sort of really focused on that, well, I guess Dragon Age Inquisition had a lot of story. You got a lot of different romance options and stuff in that. But something like the Citadel.
Just who you can do. Like,
well, just giant bull, man. I want to do the giant bull. But, something like the Citadel at least kind of highlighted that they can revisit characters and plug stuff in.
Yeah.
If they were to reduce stuff down, that helps them on the budgetary side as well, which hopefully helps with someone like EA saying, how much is this going to cost us? And then going from there.
There's massive scope for, we now associate Mass Effect with being an action shooter. Who's to say it needs to be?
I don't know if I do.
Like, who's to say it needs to be going forward? If they come back to Mass Effect, does it need to have the world exploration? Does it need to have all of these? I know that people would see its features being stripped away.
Yeah.
I would take like a tactical squad-based shooter. I'd take a bloody base management sim. Like, because of the fact that I find those things in that universe still appealing.
What's the lore? Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because it still builds on it in a way. I would just want to see the Mass Effect universe from different angles, because I'm maybe getting a bit fatigued with the idea of squad-based.
A big collector threat like in Alien Isolation, of that instead. Everyone hiding on the ship being like, oh God, the collectors are coming.
That'd be brilliant. I would enjoy that.
I think that, another overarching point is that idea that they've moved on from Mass Effect too quickly.
Yeah.
Like, because the official word on Mass Effect is that it's on ice, which is what they said after Andromeda, because it was so cataclysmic kind of thing. Like,
but they were right
wise.
To step away from it. Mm. They totally were right. Because if they'd said, right, okay, we're going to release Andromeda 2 or whatever it was going to be called straight away, maybe a year or two after, people would just be like, nah,
do a Watch Dogs.
I'm not keen on
that. I think a lot of it is in the execution. Yeah, I mean, I think they could do, like, obviously Anthem is a breath of fresh air, in terms of a new IP.
It's a breath of air.
It's a lot of air in that game. And so, like, at least it's them kind of getting to do a new IP and design something from the ground up again. Even though, like I said, if you compare it formulaically, story-wise, it's the same. You might as well swap the nouns around again. But there is that. But, like, maybe they'll go back to Mass Effect after that. The fact that they said, we come into work thinking of this thing. And I get that it's on N7 day, so they're not going to not say that. But then, do you guys think that that means that they could go back to it after Anthem?
I just think that if you have, like, I don't know, made it sound like they were in prison, because it was just kind of like, we come to work every day thinking about a game we'd rather make.
Kinda.
I back it. I think what people have, I can't remember where I've read this, whether it's people speculating or people wanting or something. I think it was literally just forums being like, we would like this, but it being about like the Spectre Wars before Mass Effect.
The First Contact War,
and that's a way of them going back to their big wars, but also being able to
tell the personal story of what the hell was going on.
If you did the Turian thing, like if you focused on, because I would love it if they did focus on specific races. I love the stuff they do with the Krogans and the rituals.
I'm a bit sick of humans, to be honest.
That's the thing, because loads of people in Scrolls like love playing as other races.
Always a Khajiit.
I'm always an Argonian,
so
but it's like, that's one of the best things. If you're going to do escapism, if you're going to do all the potential allegories to real world problems and stuff, you can do them by embodying a different race or a different person altogether. So again, like I said, the Mass Effect, like the lore is just so tappable for something else. It's so mineable for something else. But I mean, I don't know. I hope they do another numbered one and put a stamp on, this is Mass Effect 4, I guess it would be.
The next movement, five, as it were.
Yeah.
Mass Effect 0, if it's going back to the Contact Wars.
Oh God. I mean, the first Contact Wars have been covered so much in like the books and stuff.
It would be interesting to be able to play it. I don't know. I don't know where else they would, like, I don't know where else you could take like another I keep thinking about this formula you've laid out about it being a big war and it getting bigger and bigger, because that is what it is doing. Like, yeah. It definitely is. But once you've had like world-ending gods appear, it's not really gonna... You're not gonna top it again, are you?
Like, no, unless you do it again, but from a different angle, and you do it from a fatalist perspective of the Prothean race, where basically like you are fighting and you know you're going to lose, but it's you getting like the Animatrix, where it's like getting that message out.
Yeah.
So the whole game is just building up to you helping the next generation of people try and survive.
Well, that really worked with like Rogue One. Like you can, because I would go back to the Shepard stuff. I would love for them to address the end of Mass Effect 3 in some way. I don't really mind how you do it, but I would love that they sort of, because they did the extended cut and then they just pretended it never happened after that, and it was like, now we're doing Andromeda and we're going to a different galaxy, so we don't have to talk about it.
I know.
And then everyone who's in that game doesn't even know how the Shepard story ended, because they've already left.
And that's a real shame.
And that was their way of just never addressing it. So I think I would like them to be able to reapproach like something that happened in that timeline, or some way of addressing the end of Mass Effect 3. But whatever, you guys, let us know what you think down in the comments below if you're on the video version, or find us on social media if you're listening on the various platforms that we're available on. This has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ash Millman.
Goodbye.
And joined by Jules Gill.
Go follow me at RetroJ with a 0 over on Twitter.
Good Lord, we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.